It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey everyone, Nate Hale here. Just a word of caution. This episode contains some graphic descriptions of animal and human deaths. If you're squeamish or have young ears near you, you may want to check out a different episode. And now, on with the show. During the late 1870s, a group of Mormon pioneers settled the western slope of the 14,000-foot Blanca Massif in Colorado's San Luis Valley. The SLV is the world's largest alpine valley, and it's completely surrounded by mountains on all sides. The King family were among the first settlers. It was there they built a 2,000-acre cattle ranch that stretched from the foot of the mountains to the valley floor. The Kings initially built a small cabin on the land and would go on to build a much larger ranch house about 5 miles away deeper into the valley. They were a pretty typical ranching family, hardworking, God-fearing, the stereotypical salt-of-the-earth types who worked long hours from sunup to sundown. By the late 1960s, the family consisted of the King family matriarch, 85-year-old Agnes King, her two sons Harry and Ben, and a daughter named Nellie. For the most part, life in the valley was quiet and predictable. That is until the period between late 1966 through the summer of 1967, when residents who lived near the King Ranch began reporting strange sightings of what they described as small mini jets, somewhere between 10 and 12 feet long, zipping by overhead. Some people claim these unusual aircraft dive-bombed their cars as they drove along the nearby sand dunes. Still others said they saw these unidentified flying objects appearing to pass directly into Middle Creek Hill before vanishing from sight. The Navajo tribes who used to populate the region had stories that the western slopes were dotted with mysterious doorways that could take you to a land where it was said that all thought originates. But hardly anyone gave much credence to these legends. They were just campfire stories to stir the imaginations of wide-eyed children. But after witnesses began seeing the strange aircraft disappearing into the hills, some folks started looking around for somewhere those mysterious aircraft might have gone. But no cave entrances or other places they might have vanished to could be found. One story goes that in 2003, a pair of hikers claimed to have seen a 15 to 20 foot high doorway up along the cliffs on the south side of the Great Sand Dunes. But after they made a difficult climb to get a closer look, they couldn't find the doorway anywhere. On September 8, 1967, another event occurred on the King Ranch that would go on to spark a new wave of unexplained phenomena that continues to this day. That was when Harry King went out to feed his three prized horses. When he went out to the field on that blustery morning, he thought it was odd that only two of the three horses were there waiting for their morning grain and water. He looked around, but his three-year-old mare Lady was nowhere to be seen. Harry figured Lady must have wandered off somewhere, and he assumed she'd return once she got hungry enough. But by the following morning, when Lady was still hadn't returned, Harry became worried enough that he performed a more thorough search for her. After about an hour, he finally found Lady in a meadow about a quarter mile north of the main ranch house, or at least, what was left of her. Lady's corpse had been completely stripped of all tissue from her shoulders to the tip of her nose. The exposed skeleton glistened in the sunlight. The bones had been bleached as white as if they had been sitting under the hot desert sun for decades. All the muscles, tendons, flesh, and hide were missing from the horse's nose, all the way to a circular incision just above the horse's shoulders. It might have been considered natural for such decay to occur over several weeks, but this had happened overnight. A later examination would show these wounds were as clean as if someone had taken a surgical scalpel to the horse's flesh. The examination also revealed that Lady was missing several of her vital organs as well. On top of all that, Nelly would go on to claim in interviews there was a strange medicinal odor surrounding Lady. And that when she touched the horse's mane, her hand turned fiery red and began burning fiercely until she managed to scrub it clean. There were no witnesses who ever claimed to have seen what killed the king's horse. This despite the fact that Lady's remains were lying about a quarter mile from a heavily traversed two-lane dirt road. Strangely, Harry King could find no scavenger or predator tracks, not even any bird droppings. King left the remains where they were, and over the next month, the bleached white appearance of the bones began to change to a more normal reddish color. The ground was still damp from rain a few days prior, so the king should have been able to find any tracks from whatever predator had done this to the horse. But the only tracks he found were that of his own horses, and yet even these told a bizarre story all on their own. It appeared that all three of the horses had been running at full tilt as if they were being chased by something. The tracks showed the horses were headed southeast at a full gallop toward the ranch house, when Lady's hoof prints abruptly broke away from the other two. King could see the tracks from his two remaining horses as they made a beeline back toward the ranch house. But Lady's hoof prints suddenly shot off in a different direction for several hundred yards, before coming to an abrupt halt in mid-stride. Over the next few days, the Kings continued to search the area with the aid of some family friends, hoping to find some answers as to what happened to Lady. The group found what appeared to be four burned areas shaped like an upside-down question mark in the earth several feet away from the horse's remains. They also found a number of small holes that appeared to be punched into the ground, and a pair of bushes that were completely flattened. The Kings reported the incident to the Alamosa County Sheriff, but the sheriff refused to even drive out to the scene, instead claiming that Lady's death was a result of a lightning strike. Although he would later concede it was unusual, the horse had no visible burn marks on its body. A veterinarian who examined Lady's remains noted that the animal's brain, lungs, heart, and thyroid were all missing, none of which would have been explained by a lightning strike, and that all these cuts appeared to have been cleanly made by some sharp instrument. Once word got out to the press about the mysterious death of Lady, reporters had a field day with the story, especially when several locals began adding that they had been seeing unidentified flying objects over the area weeks earlier. The problem you'll find with the story of Lady's death is that in everyone's haste to report the tale, many of the facts became jumbled as well. Somewhere along the lines, Lady would be given the name Snippy, which is the name you'll often see reported when researching the case. Snippy was actually Lady's sire and belonged to Nellie's husband, Burl Lewis. The death of Lady the horse would open the floodgates for thousands of similar stories that get reported each year up till today. Every year, thousands of reports by irate ranchers are made about the mysterious deaths of their livestock, especially their cattle. Oftentimes, these cattle are found stripped of their flesh and organs, with little or no blood found around them, or any evidence as to who or what might have killed them. I'm Nate Hale, coming to you live from my secret recording studio on board the Black Knight satellite, and this is The Conspirators. On October 18, 1967, an East Texas State University sociology professor named Ross Henderson and one of his students, Lonnie Furbay, interviewed Nellie Lewis about what she witnessed regarding her dead horse. Along with the details she mentioned about Lady's gruesome appearance and the unusual burning sensation she experienced when she touched the corpse, Nellie also told the men how her mother Agnes, along with a number of other local residents, had been seeing strange lights in the sky over the surrounding countryside for weeks. By that point in history, there was already a nationwide fever for stories about UFOs. The press and public ate these stories up. So once word got out about the possible UFO connection to Lady's death, the San Luis Valley gained a reputation as a UFO hotspot. Droves of UFO watchers and other curiosity seekers came to the area hoping to see E.T. in action. A group of Adams State College students even painted over a billboard to declare Alamosa as the flying saucer capital of the world. Over the next several years, farmers and ranchers all over the globe began reporting they too had discovered some of their cattle or other livestock being mysteriously mutilated. Every year, all the way up to today, hundreds and even thousands of such reports are made all over the world. And yet no one can agree to what the actual cause of these strange cattle mutilations actually are. Grazing lands cover one-third of the continental United States, approximately the same acreage as the entire country of Argentina. The livestock and poultry industries are big business, raking in nearly $100 billion each year. Just a single cow can be worth thousands of dollars. Consequently, bad weather, disease, or other hazards to livestock can also prove incredibly costly to ranchers. One of the major problems is that ranch lands are often big and open. Your average cattle ranch takes up about 2,900 acres, or roughly 4 square miles. This makes it difficult to keep an eye on each and every cow, which means they also can be in danger of predators. This is why most ranchers use trained guard dogs and keep barbed wire fences around their perimeters. Every year, about 2% of livestock deaths are attributed to animal predators. Human cattle rustlers are another threat. Back in the Old West, cattle rustling was considered equally as serious a problem as murder was, with both crimes carrying a death sentence. Modern-day cattle rustlers steal cattle by loading them into trucks and selling them to unsuspecting buyers who sometimes don't even realize they're purchasing stolen merchandise. By the early 1970s, cattle rustling was costing millions of dollars to ranchers across the western United States. In 1973, U.S. Attorney Alan Danielson announced that he was leading a joint task force of the FBI and the Iowa Bureau of Investigation that was meant to put a stop to all the rustling once and for all. But this investigation dried up after only a few months. And subsequent investigations turned up evidence that made some investigators question whether all these strange deaths were the work of normal human cattle rustlers after all. In late 1973, a Texas ranger named Hap Roberts was called out to the scene to investigate the death of two cows near Kingsville, Texas. As well as being a Texas ranger, Hap was also an agent working for a local cattle farmers association. And throughout his career, he had investigated more than 400 cattle deaths. In his experience, nearly all of them were the work of predators or natural causes. But the two dead calves he investigated in 1973 were something different. Both of these animals were cut cleanly, straight down the middle of their chests. Someone had removed the animals' tongues, ears, tails, and sexual organs. They had also carved large triangles in the cows' hides. Hap had never seen anything like it before. Clearly, this wasn't the work of any typical animal predator. Although the year 1967 is often cited as the earliest known animal mutilation story, there have been a few other such incidents that cattle mutilation researchers had pointed to from centuries earlier. In 1606, mass slaughters of sheep were reported around the countryside outside London. In those cases, farmers reported that the sheep carcasses were found missing their tallow and internal organs. At the time, written reports of these mutilations either claimed the deaths of these animals were attributed to fireworks, or in some versions, the evil rituals of witches. Legendary paranormal researcher Charles Fort cataloged several reported incidents of animal mutilations that occurred in England throughout the late 19th and early 20th centuries. In 1909, an article was published in the Ontario Daily Record that bore the headline, "Cattle Killed in a Cruel Manner, Elgin Farmer Suffers by a Malignant Enemy." The article went on to describe the story of a farmer named Tom Gilbert, who had 11 of his prized cattle mysteriously die in the weeks after Christmas. An examination by a veterinarian found that someone had driven a sharp instrument down the animals' throats. In 1903, a young lawyer named George Adalji was arrested in India for the crime of mutilating a horse. In that incident, none other than Sir Arthur Conan Doyle stepped up and championed the man's innocence. An article from October 1902 that ran in Australia's Brisbane Courier detailed the gruesome discovery of some mutilated cows that were said to have had their tongues cut out. Although the deaths were attributed at the time to travelers who came across a dying animal and put them out of their misery, cutting the tongues out to eat at the same time. Another report from Lismore in 1953 spoke about Australian police efforts to arrest a so-called full moon maniac who had been slashing the stomachs, udders, and hindquarters of cattle under cover of darkness. Paranormal researcher John Keel, of the Mothman Prophecies fame, also claimed to have investigated a number of animal mutilation cases in 1966, a year before the discovery of Lady. But by and large, the phenomenon we've come to know as cattle mutilation wouldn't become widely known outside cattle ranching communities until the first stories of Lady, aka Snippy, were published in the Pueblo Chieftain in 1967. In a typical cattle mutilation, the animal's corpse is found dead with major parts missing. Oftentimes, cattle are reported found missing their eyes, ears, udders, anuses, sexual organs, and tongues, all of which seemingly were removed with some sharp, clean instrument. Also, in most of these cases, little to no blood can be found in the immediate vicinity. Nor are there ever any signs of typical scavengers. In fact, in some of these cases, it's been reported scavengers and even insects appear to refuse to touch the dead carcass. And some of the ranchers who found the animals say the scene appeared as if they were dropped from above. The story of Lady's mysterious death has also inextricably linked stories of cattle mutilations to that of UFOs. In fact, within 24 hours of the horse's discovery, a local Superior Court judge named Charles Bennett claimed to have seen three glowing orange rings in the sky flying in a triangular formation at incredible speed. Likewise, two sheriff's deputies also reported being followed around by a mysterious orange globe. But UFOs aren't the only unexplained aerial vehicle that are often linked to cattle mutilation stories. Many farmers and cattle ranchers also reported seeing strange black or dark green helicopters in the night sky around the time their cattle were being killed. The Federal Aviation Administration requires all aircraft to have identifying numbers on their tails. But witnesses who saw these mysterious helicopters flying overhead around the time of various cattle mutilations all agreed these copters bore no markings of any kind that might identify them. There was no indication whether these copters might have belonged to the military or some private company.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
In late 1973, several Kansas farmers reported seeing numerous black helicopters hovering over their cattle pens. Right around the time 44 cows were found mutilated. Around the same time, several witnesses in Rome, Iowa also reported seeing a dark green helicopter flying low overhead. Right before, 35 more cows completely vanished. Texas researcher Tom Adams cataloged more than 200 unidentified helicopter sightings on or around the time cattle mutilations occurred. In Pond, Missouri, a farmer named James Hagler had five of his pigs stolen around the same time an unmarked helicopter was spotted flying low over the town. On October 18, 1973, Hagler got fed up and decided to sleep outside, hoping to catch whoever was stealing his pigs in the act. In the early morning hours, he was awoken by the sound of a helicopter flying low over his pig pen. Hagler grabbed his rifle and raised it to fire at the chopper. Only before he could even get off a shot, a bullet whizzed by him. Someone was shooting at him instead. Hagler then realized there was an armed man standing in his pig pen. Hagler shot at the man, who ran for cover into some nearby woods. The helicopter flew away as well. Hagler went on to check his pigs when another bullet came so close it clipped the brim of his hat. Hagler returned fire in the direction the shot had come from, but he never saw who took the shot at him. Across the country, nervous farmers and ranchers began patrolling the back roads armed and began shooting at every helicopter they saw. This proved especially dangerous since some of these helicopters weren't connected to cattle mutilations at all. Some of them were utility workers checking electric lines or other commercial vehicles. Things grew so dangerous that the Nebraska National Guard were issued orders to fly their choppers at a higher altitude to avoid getting shot at by trigger-happy farmers. On August 21, 1975, Sheriff Tex Graves of Logan County, Colorado, actually chased after one of these unmarked helicopters. Graves drove after the copter in a patrol car while he had one of his deputies following at a distance in a small plane. They tried hanging back a distance in order to see where the helicopter went. But then around midnight, Graves was stopped in a desolate country road by two official-looking men who said they worked at Warren Air Force Base, and that they were there to help Graves track the helicopter. They told Graves that other Air Force personnel were already tracking the copter on radar. But throughout the night, the men gave contradictory information that led Graves in different directions, away from the helicopter. And by 4:30 that morning, he had lost sight of it completely. When Graves called Warren Air Force Base later on demanding some answers, the official he spoke to claimed he never sent any men to assist the sheriff. Then on October 21st of the same year, zookeepers for Wyoming Cheyenne Mountain Zoo came to work on a freezing cold morning, only to discover a gruesome sight. A 1,500-pound bison was found dead. Someone had cut off the animal's ear, part of the hide, and removed its sexual organs. The veterinarian who examined the corpse found bloody fluid in the bison's abdomen, tissue, and eyeballs. The vet had never seen anything like it, and didn't know of any earthly disease that could have caused the fluid buildup. He also said the cutting was done cleanly with obvious surgical precision. In fact, he added the unknown surgeon did the job better than he could do. As the number of cattle mutilation cases soared, Senator Floyd Haskell of Colorado asked the FBI to investigate. But the FBI declined, stating that these deaths didn't cross state lines and were therefore out of their jurisdiction. This infuriated Haskell, since he tried pointing out that just a couple years earlier, the FBI did investigate cattle rustling because it occurred in multiple states. But now they were claiming cattle mutilations were out of their jurisdiction. Throughout the 1970s, several states offered rewards in the tens of thousands of dollars for information leading to an arrest in the cattle mutilation cases. But no one ever came forward to claim these rewards. In 1979, the first federal investigation was launched by a group called the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration. They were a short-lived task force whose job was to aid local communities in investigating crimes. But right away, many farmers felt something was wrong with this investigation. Only a paltry $50,000 was allocated towards the cattle mutilation investigation, despite the hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of livestock that had already been killed. The LEAA put a former FBI agent named Kenneth Rommel in charge. But Rommel had no experience with agriculture crimes or cattle rustling. During Rommel's tenure with the FBI, he had been involved in several bank robbery and espionage cases. He had never investigated anything like cattle mutilation before. And yet, by June 1980, less than a year after his investigation began, Rommel issued a 297-page report that explained all the cattle mutilation cases as simply the work of animal predators. The report cited an animal veterinarian from the University of Missouri who claimed the so-called surgical wounds were the work of animal claw marks. The report went on to say that the seeming lack of blood at each death scene was actually the result of gravity causing the blood to pool in the lower extremities. Now, it is true that scavengers will often go for the soft tissues of a dead animal, like the tongue and eyeballs. And blood can pool in the lower extremities the way the vet described. It can even seep into the earth where it's consumed by insects or even reduced by solar desiccation. But Rommel's investigation left a lot of farmers feeling angry. No one took kindly to the dismissive tone used by Rommel toward them. Many felt as if Rommel thought of them as just a bunch of dumb yokels who didn't know the difference between scavengers attacking their cows and whatever this was killing them. Rommel's report also dismissed all stories of mysterious helicopters or strange lights in the sky, and said those too were just stories dreamed up by an over-imaginative press. He pointed out that there were clearly no human perpetrators involved in these deaths, because no one had ever come forward to claim the large rewards being offered. Rommel's investigation left a lot of questions unanswered, and it left a lot of people upset. Later on, it was revealed that Rommel actually only personally investigated 15 cattle mutilations, and of those, Rommel reportedly never got out of the car to look at the animals. Apparently, the sight of the dead cows made him sick. Just a few weeks after Rommel's report was released, the Sutherland family in Moffat, Colorado, said they rushed outside during dinner, only to see a small yellow helicopter flying low over the pasture containing their prized bull. The following morning, they awoke to find their bull with its eyes missing and its penis cut off. According to the family, they left the bull's carcass where it lay. Only strangely, no other predators wanted anything to do with it. And even the flies that landed on the corpse dropped dead almost immediately. In May 1973, one story emerged of a woman named Judy Doherty, who claimed to have seen an animal mutilation occur right before her very eyes. According to Doherty, she was on her way back from a Houston, Texas bingo parlor along with her mother, her 14-year-old daughter Cindy, and her sister-in-law when the bizarre events occurred. She said she'd been driving along a stretch of highway past some cattle ranches when she saw a brilliant light appear in the sky overhead. Suddenly, the light in the sky directed a beam of light at the ground that at first shone down in the field before enveloping her car and blinding her. Judy slammed on her brakes and the group jumped out of the car to see what was happening. Judy couldn't believe her eyes. The beam of light shone down on a calf standing in a field, and suddenly the cow began being lifted up into what she now realized was a spaceship up above. Then, before Judy knew what else was happening, she remembered being in a small room where two gray aliens with large black eyes appeared and began cutting into the cow with strange surgical instruments. Judy was terrified as she watched the aliens carefully remove the animal's skin and stuck needles and probes into its eyeballs and abdomen. The next thing Judy remembers was she was standing back in the ground next to her daughter, and neither the UFO nor the cow were anywhere to be seen. Judy Doherty's story makes for a pretty remarkable tale, but is any of it true? That's a matter of conjecture. Keep in mind that most of Judy's story actually came out through a controversial technique known as hypnotic regression. In this technique, a subject is hypnotized and asked to recall past events. It's a technique that's often been used in cases of alleged alien abduction, and even by law enforcement in attempts to get witnesses to recall details of crimes. But skeptics of this technique dismiss its use, claiming that the hypnotists are often untrained, and the interviewers use leading questions to get the subject's imagination to fill in the blanks and tell them what they want to hear. In the case of Judy Doherty, her hypnotic regression therapy was done at the request of cattle mutilation researcher Linda Moulton Howe, who stands firmly in the camp that cattle mutilations are the work of extraterrestrial visitors. There's actually a pretty big schism between researchers who believe aliens are killing the cows and others who think there may be some more earthly explanations. Some investigators who have looked into cattle mutilations over the years have come away agreeing with Kenneth Rommel's assessment that natural predation could explain away the phenomena. In 1979, an Arkansas County Sheriff's Department decided to put this hypothesis to the test by laying out the carcass of a dead cow in a field and observing it to see what happened next. Over the next day and a half, a number of small scavengers, birds, and insects pecked away at the dead cow, leaving behind some skeletal remains that looked very similar to those seen in other animal mutilation cases. In fact, one possible explanation that's been given for the so-called clean surgical cuts actually comes from abdominal swelling that occurs with natural gases building up inside the animal carcass that causes the skin to split open once the pressure builds up inside. But not everyone is convinced that natural phenomena are the answer to the mystery. In 1980, an Iowa veterinary pathologist studied a mutilated calf and realized that the tongue had been cleanly severed at the back of the throat. In his experience, scavengers would have eaten the tip of the tongue, not climb all the way inside the animal's mouth. On top of that, the pathologist did her own cuts with a scalpel to a cow tongue and was able to reproduce exactly what she was seeing in the cattle mutilation. Likewise, a New Mexico State policeman named Gabe Valdez once studied a mutilated bull and found the animal's system contained both a tranquilizer and an anticoagulant. The policeman studied numerous animal mutilation cases and came to believe that whoever was doing it was drugging the animals then using the anticoagulating agent to more easily drain the blood from the body. After a string of cattle mutilations occurred between the late summer through the fall of 1979 near Alberta, Canada, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police performed their own investigation. Corporal Lynn Lauber of the Mounties issued his own report that was highly critical of Kenneth Rommel's report on cattle mutilation. The RCMP's report came right out and stated that Rommel appeared to either ignore or omit several key pieces of evidence. And to Lauber, it felt as if there was some political motivation behind Rommel's rush to judgment. When Rommel was asked about Lauber's report by journalists, he angrily lashed out and said he wouldn't comment on it. Several veterinarians and other investigators sided with Corporal Lauber's report on cattle mutilation. Many of them felt there was some sort of government cover-up going on to hide the truth about what was really going on. Let's face it, one of the only organizations large enough with enough resources to coordinate such a massive-scale operation across multiple states and countries is the United States government. Some sort of government military operation would also explain the unmarked military helicopters that were seen throughout the 1970s through the 1990s. One of the people who concurred with this theory was Sheriff Darius Carter from Cache County, Utah. In 1976, Carter staked out Logan Cache Airport, hoping to see some of the unmarked helicopters coming or going. And one night, he did. Late one evening, Carter saw an unmarked dark green helicopter land and two pilots get out. Neither men were wearing helmets, and they were both dressed in dark-colored overalls that bore no markings or insignia on them. But at the same time, he realized what a dangerous position he was in. He thought about arresting the men, but instead became worried about his own safety and instead issued a stern warning to the two pilots. He told them that after this night, he was going to order his deputies to shoot down any unmarked helicopters on sight. And for a while, it appeared to work. Over the next 5 years, no more cattle mutilations occurred in Cache County. Once word got out about what Carter had done, reached some of his colleagues who worked for a Texas Sheriff's Department, those deputies began organizing their own armed patrols in areas where cattle mutilations occurred. And just like in Utah, the number of mutilations dropped significantly. So if cattle mutilations really are the work of the U.S. government, you have to ask the question, why? Well, some researchers think they might have a possible answer to that. Back in the 1960s, at the height of the Cold War, the U.S. government was experimenting with every weapon at their disposal to defeat the Soviet Union. This included biological warfare. One of the deadly biological agents they experimented with was an agent known as Clostridium botulinum. This deadly agent could cause outbreaks of botulism in large groups of people and animals. Left untreated, botulism causes intestinal distress, paralysis, and even death. The mortality rate for botulism is 50% in untreated patients. The Center for Disease Control lists Clostridium botulinum as one of the greatest threat risk agents for bioterrorism. Just a mere gram of the aerosolized toxin has the potential to kill 1.5 million people. In 1971, the U.S. signed a treaty with the Soviet Union banning experimentation with biological warfare agents. This included a ban on Clostridium botulinum. But just because a ban was in place doesn't necessarily mean the U.S. government completely gave up on such research. There's a particularly dangerous disease in cattle known as blackleg. The way young cows contract blackleg is by ingesting soil contaminated with contagion as they graze. Once the contagion is in their bloodstream, the cow loses its appetite, becomes lethargic, and dies. In its final stages, the cow's legs turn black from gangrene, hence the name. Some cattle mutilation researchers believe that many of the cattle deaths that occurred over the subsequent decades were actually a cover for the government to continue experimenting with the botulinum toxin in secret to avoid alerting the Soviets. That way, any mysterious deaths of cattle could be attributed to natural predation or other causes. Basically, anything other than top-secret government experiments. This theory gained enough traction that even one of the government's own scientists began promoting it. Dr. Robert Hedelius of the U.S. Department of Agriculture publicly told a television reporter that he believed the U.S. government was using blackleg as a cover for their own biological warfare experiments. Eventually, though, Hedelius was ordered to stop talking to the press by his superiors. One related theory to cattle mutilation was presented by biochemist Colm Kelleher, who investigated several cattle mutilations firsthand. He believes the U.S. government was attempting to track the spread of bovine, spongiform, encephalopathy, better known as mad cow disease. But although the theory that the U.S. government is behind cattle mutilations makes a degree of sense, it doesn't completely hold up to scrutiny, though. For one thing, it doesn't necessarily account for cattle mutilations that happen in other countries around the world. You also have to wonder why the U.S. government would do something so potentially risky as attacking livestock out in the open when they certainly have more than enough resources to perform their own experiments on their own test animals under much more controlled conditions than some farmer's field in the middle of the night. Yet another major theory about cattle mutilations is that they're all the work of organized group of cultists around the world using mutilated animals in their diabolical rituals. Throughout the 1970s and 1980s, many newspaper stories appeared across the U.S. describing how satanic cults were popping up everywhere. In 1975, the U.S. Treasury Department assigned a man named Donald Flickinger to investigate any possible connection between cattle mutilations and cult activity. Although Flickinger documented several unusual incidents, he was unable to find sufficient evidence to get the ATF involved. The satanic cult theory became so widespread that in 1980, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation hired an investigator to see if there was any possible occult connection to animal mutilation. The investigator discovered a pair of abandoned houses near the location of several cattle mutilations that spooked him. Inside the houses were what he described as satanic altars. One of the buildings contained a pentagram with a dog's skull at its center. The walls were painted with graffiti that read things like, "The devil is here," and "Satan lives here." In the other house, the investigator found a different altar, this one topped with a cow skull. But other than a few random sightings of cloaked figures in some farmers' fields, there really isn't much evidence that satanic cults had anything to do with cattle mutilations. Besides that, cultists certainly wouldn't have the resources to employ a fleet of unmarked helicopters. And considering most satanic panic stories have been debunked and shown to be nothing more than mass hysteria in action, it's hard to believe there was such a massive organization in operation around the world, and yet no one came forward and revealed it to the police. So if it's not the government and it's not satanic cults, then that leads us back to the theory about extraterrestrial visitors. It's actually pretty easy to chalk animal mutilations up to aliens. For one thing, we can't possibly question an alien's motives. So your guess as to what they might be trying to learn from dissecting a cow is as good as mine. Judy Doherty claimed after her abduction experience that these mutilations were a warning the aliens were trying to spread around the world for humans to stop building nuclear weapons, which seems like a bit of a stretch to my mind, but again, who knows? There was a Colorado science teacher who studied some tissue samples taken from both a cow who died under natural circumstances and compared it to tissue samples taken from a mutilated cow. The teacher claimed the tissue samples from the first cow appeared pretty much as she would have expected, with ruptured and crushed cells visible under a microscope. But the tissue samples from the mutilated cow were shockingly different. Those cell walls remained completely intact. It appeared as if whatever medical instrument was used was actually precise enough to cut between the cells, leaving them unharmed. There isn't any medical tool on Earth that can do that. One much darker thought you also have to consider is that if aliens really are visiting Earth and dissecting animals, why would they stop at just cows? Well, there are some UFO researchers who worry that they haven't. In September 1988, the body of an unidentified man was found lying by the edge of a reservoir in Sao Paulo, Brazil. According to a classified autopsy report that was leaked to the press a few years later, what happened to the man was nothing short of horrifying. Photographs can be found on the internet that are pure nightmare fuel. You can see them, but I really don't recommend it. The man's face is frozen in a rictus of fear. An autopsy of his brain shows evidence of severe trauma, as if in his final moments he encountered severe torture and something utterly terrifying. According to the report, the man's rectum was cored out of him. His testicles were removed along with his eyes and part of his jawbone. Circular holes underneath his arms and another in his stomach appeared to be places where the man's internal organs were removed. There are some reports that claim the man was a local alcoholic who succumbed to exposure, stripped off his clothes before dying, and was subsequently the victim of scavengers feasting on his flesh. All things considered, though, that's really the best case scenario we can hope for in this instance. The Conspirators is written and produced by me, Nate Hale, an entirely fictional identity. Thanks so much for listening. Just a reminder that I have a Patreon account set up where patrons of the show can get access to all sorts of nifty bonuses, including stickers, magnets, t-shirts, and our ever-growing library of bonus mini-episodes. In fact, I'm going to have a new episode out very shortly. Another great way you can help support the show is to check out our merch store. You can purchase all sorts of Conspirators t-shirts, mugs, phone cases, and much, much more. If you're interested in either Patreon or my merch store, I'll put a link in the show notes. Yet another great way you can help us out that won't cost a dime is to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. Each one of your ratings and reviews helps boost us in Apple's magical rankings and spreads the good word to more people. If you're not on Apple, not to worry, you can also find our show in most of the places you get your podcasts, including Spotify and Stitcher. We also have a website, theconspiratorspodcast.com, where you can listen to our entire back catalog of shows. Elsewhere, I encourage you to follow us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and our Facebook page. You can even write us an old-fashioned email at conspiratorspodcast@gmail.com. I love to hear from you. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.